Hello, thank you for joining me on Conversations with Catalysts. Please find my links anytime at jeremywest.net. Right now, I am offering a free session with me to explore whether you want to do an 8-week mindfulness course, which is pay what you want or just pay it forward. So check out jeremywest.net for that. Also, pay what you want slash pay it forward. Therapy sessions, if there's anything you're working on that you would like to try hypnotherapy on.
Today, I have with me Megan Gall. Welcome, Megan.
Thanks, Jeremy. Appreciate you having me.
Megan, can you please tell us a little bit of your story? Who is Megan Gall and how did you come to the world of coaching?
Yes, I totally can. So, my name is Megan Gall, as we said. I really came to coaching from an education background. I was trained as a high school social studies teacher. I did that for just a little bit. I went to kind of outside the classroom. I worked as a tutoring center director, but really the desire to start coaching came after I had a pretty big weight loss. And that experience and learning how to maintain that weight loss and still kind of enjoy life and get a ton out of life was really what made me want to start bringing that to other people. I had just seen so many people bogged down by trying to get healthy, but doing it in a way that felt totally alien to them, totally inauthentic. So that's what brought me to want to coach people with their health habits and try to help people get to a healthier weight in a calm, self-compassionate, kind way.
Sorry, Megan, I lost you for several seconds there. Are you on Wi-Fi or are you?
Here, let me make sure that I'm here. Can you hear me a little better now?
Well, yeah, it just dropped. I mean, I could hear you fine, and then it just dropped out. But there was a little bit of scratchiness as well before that. But yeah, it sounds all right now. We'll see how we go.
Okay, yeah. I just put myself on the Wi-Fi. Hopefully that's better.
It's still kind of
Okay.
scratchy.
I wonder why that would be. I don't know. I'm not using headphones. Is that something I should be doing?
No. Okay. Well, let's just keep going and see how we go. We'll just back up a little bit. You were a social studies teacher, and then you lost a lot of weight, and then so were you helped through the weight loss by a coach yourself, or?
Love that question. No, I did get started trying to heal some of my eating behaviors with a cognitive behavioral therapist who's worked with people who wanted to change disordered eating habits before. So that really helped me with an emotional eating habit that I had really fallen into pretty strongly. So that person truly helped me start taking action instead of really getting bogged down in the emotion behind why I was eating that way. So that's really what got me started with understanding that I did have the capability to reach a healthier weight. At first, that wasn't my goal. My goal was just to stop eating in a way that made me feel guilty. And then later on, I realized that I was capable of getting to a healthier weight.
And so how did you then find out about coaching and get into that?
Yeah, so another pretty strong influence on me was a person who had lost 170 pounds after yo-yo dieting for, I don't know, like decades, her whole adult life. And she became a podcaster and a coach. Her name is Heather Robertson. She has a podcast called Half Size Me. And I really think I wouldn't have thought about coaching unless if I hadn't learned about her, understood her kind of approach, which was so rational, so calm, so like logical and unemotional. And I really admired that. And it helped me so much. And she really inspired me to want to go towards coaching.
Okay, excellent. So I guess a question that somebody asked me once when many years ago we were doing customer service and we didn't have a customer and we were just chatting, and she said, "What's if you could bring more of any one thing into this world, what would it be?" And it took me a minute to answer it, but I thought that's a really good way to boil down really quickly what is your sort of purpose in life. So, Megan, if you could bring more of any one thing into this world, what would it be?
I think it would be like peace with oneself, like inner peace. I think that that is the inability to be okay with how someone is right now is such a, I don't know, it's a foundation for so many of these behaviors that we see ourselves doing that we know are not good for us and they work against us. So, and life is just nicer when you're aligned with what you're doing and you feel good about what you're doing. So inner peace, I guess it sounds like a cliche answer, but it made a big difference for me to make some big changes with how I saw myself.
No, I think it's, well, I said to someone recently on this podcast, cliches become cliches because they're true. Yeah. And so I think world peace really does begin with each individual having peace within themselves, because generally when we start fighting with other people, it's because there's something not right with ourselves.
Yeah, I think we tend to put a lot of, and I'm not excluding myself from this, I think humans put a lot of their power in like things that are outside themselves. So they will really look to other people's behavior as a way to make them feel better. So I felt awful today because the people at work weren't welcoming, or because my partner didn't take out the garbage, or because my kids were really off the wall today. And it's so hard to live life when you put everything external to yourself and you find that you can't take any action because you feel like the victim in everything, which is kind of, I think, a lot of our default. And but things look so different when you look at a situation and really just hyper-focus on the things that are totally in your control. And it's amazing how much we forget is in our control and how much we can actually do when we're prompted to, whether by a coach or by a podcast we're listening to or a friend.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have a degree in psychology, and I remember learning that people who take responsibility are more resilient. So even when there's someone who got in a plane accident that really, the pilot, that really wasn't their fault. It was, I don't remember why it happened, but they took responsibility for it as if it was their fault. And when you do that, it means you feel in control. So even when you take responsibility for the negative things that happen, then you believe that you have control. And when you believe that you have control, you're a lot more resilient and able to cope with the things that happen, because you're not thinking that they're all happening to you, but you think you have some sort of control over and you always do have control over the way that you react to things.
Yeah. And I think the learned helplessness really comes in strong when we don't reground ourselves in like, okay, no, these things are in my control. That wasn't, but these things are. And so it's crazy how much, I'm always surprised at how much mental health and your beliefs and your worldview can play into how well you can improve your physical health, because it's almost like we think ourselves out of the good and simple actions that we want to be doing every day that are in our control that bring us a healthier body. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's crazy how much mental health and our beliefs play into how healthy our bodies are.
So that leads into my next question, which is, what would you say, if you had to boil down your philosophy behind your coaching to a sentence or two, what would you say is the core philosophy behind your coaching?
I think that what I always come back to is the smaller concrete actions are where success comes from, not the huge overarching change that you do once and then kind of set it and forget it. So my focus is constantly on today, the smallest actions, and taking whatever baseline you're at and just making a small improvement on it. So I think that we get really bogged down because we look at a huge journey that we want to do and we kind of say like, I'm never going to lose 150 pounds. I need to, I'm not going to do it. And some people would look at that problem and then take a huge step to try to change things. And people do all the time. People would clean out their pantry, cut out 3 different food groups, and try to go to the gym 5 days a week. And that is actually backwards to lasting change, because it is not sustainable in our lives. So yeah, I think I always go back to the smallest habits and making incremental improvements. And to me, that's faster because it's going to stay. So we can build on it.
Absolutely. So can you give us a success story of someone that you've worked with, where they started and where they ended up?
Oh, yeah. So I'll give a recent client. She had really spent decades thinking constantly about food. Like, she was in kind of a food cycle where either she was in a place where every food choice felt like it had to be restrictive, and there was a lot of resentment around that, or there was a lot of over planning the food, or there were other periods where food was the main source of enjoyment. So there was a lot of thinking about food in that way. So we had been working together for about 6 months or so, and she had achieved weight loss. But I think the biggest thing that she mentioned that was a change was that her thoughts were so much calmer around food. Her thoughts were not, she was making quick decisions in the morning and kind of leaving it that, or like creating really simple structures to reduce those food thoughts, the food decisions all day, every day, the should I have this, should I not have this. So she just described this marked reduction in food thoughts that were crowding out the rest of her life. And that was really meaningful to me, because I've been in that place as well, where you feel like that's the only thing that is fun in life, or it's the only thing that calms you down from stress. So I loved hearing that she saw that very marked change in her thinking.
So it sounds like she found a bit of inner peace.
Yeah. Oh, so true. I was glad to hear it.
So when you're working with clients, what are some common challenges that they, I know everyone's different, but what are common challenges that you keep seeing with lots of different clients, and how do you guide them through those obstacles?
I see a lot of folks who are, they start off quite resistant to looking honestly at the food intake. And I think that comes very understandably from years of being told what's good and what's bad. If you see a day of your food journal and there's ice cream and there's chocolate on it and there's pizza because you didn't have time to thaw the chicken, then that day feels like a failure. Even if very logically there could have been a half cup of ice cream, two squares of chocolate, and two slices of pizza with a side salad. And maybe that was completely working towards their goals, whether their goal was reaching a healthier weight or having intentional meals and snacks. But a lot of folks find a lot of difficulty in putting those quote unquote bad foods down in their food journal and looking honestly at it. So they might have had like a past history with a diet where those things were never allowed. So they're eating the things, they enjoy the things, but they don't want to see them on paper because they have this belief that it's bad and that it's not, doesn't fit their healthy lifestyle. It doesn't fit their goal. So what we work on there is kind of looking at the journal as a source of data and a source of information about what the person really enjoys, what flavors the person really enjoys. Though if they're going down in the food journal, that means there's something about them that is enjoyable, and we should probably find a way to incorporate them in their health journey. So whatever new healthy habits they're working on, more vegetables, smaller portions, we want to use the quote unquote bad foods in their food journal and include them on purpose. That's my approach, but there's a lot of information out there that makes a lot of clients start off with a lot of reluctance to put those foods down in the food journal.
So how do you help them through that?
So we definitely do a lot of clarifying of what a successful day looks like. And so what we do is kind of, I do some motivational interviewing, some questioning techniques that really get at why the client thinks, what the client thinks of that food, what are their beliefs behind the food. So if they had ice cream and they did not put it in their food journal, the questioning becomes like, well, how do you see ice cream fit into your healthy lifestyle? Do you see yourself cutting it out completely? if you look at yourself 6 months down the road, how do you want to be treating ice cream? When do you want to have it? When do you want to pass it by? So we kind of take out, we name the moral judgment. Like if they say, I know it's junk food, I know it's bad food, I kind of mention that they used those words and ask them why. Find out what's behind that. Because often those foods can totally fit in some way in their diet. It's just a matter of finding out how much they would like to have them show up in their day. So that's kind of what I do. I like to dig into the beliefs behind the food and get at how they see themselves treating it in an ideal world.
So have you been spying on me, or is ice cream, is it not just me that eats way too much ice cream? Ooh, too much.
I love it. For me, it's peanut butter and chocolate. Those things happen almost every day.
Reese's.
Yes, Reese's, my favorite. I have a sweatshirt that shows my love of Reese's. Like it just has the Reese's logo on it. And I buy Reese's merch. It's so good.
So Reese's, if you're out there listening and you want to, that's a placement ad for you in a weight loss, just send me all the Reese's. Okay. So you're saying that it's all about manageable goals and not trying to start out way too big, but starting. So can you walk us through a little bit of that process and how you help clients come up with those manageable goals, and then how you can hold them accountable to that?
Yeah. So often we'll have an initial, either a kickoff or a goal setting session where we go through what they want to see. And I think the question that I like to ask is, if we were to speak in 6 months, what would you have to see in order to be happy with your progress? And I love that question. I got it from, there's a business coach named Greg Faxon, and he uses that in his kickoff sessions, and I stole it from him. But I think it so nicely allows the person to articulate what behaviors they want to see themselves do. Like, we get stuck in the outcome of, like, I want to see myself 30 pounds down. The 6 months question helps them be more realistic and also helps them get at what the daily routine they want to see themselves doing is. So I want to see myself bringing my lunch to work. I want to see myself eating for fuel and reducing the amount of times I eat for emotions. So that those kinds of questions during the kickoff session help me get an idea of the actions that will support that outcome. And then I kind of run by the actions with them and I say, well, it sounds like this could be helpful. Have you tried that? Where are you with that? If you're skipping meals, have you tried kind of setting eating windows for yourself and keeping yourself accountable to 3 meals a day? So I use those questions to get at the key habits of someone who would get to that result. And we work on installing those habits kind of one at a time or two at a time at most.
And then if they come up with, this week, what I'm going to do is quit ice cream and quit pizza and what empty my pantry. How do you help them to scale back when they're trying to make too big of changes all at once?
I love that. I'm still working on this because I'm someone who doesn't want to quash initiative and energy, but I really want people to be honest with themselves and to look at their past and what they're capable of and use that information to give themselves reasonable tasks and not outlandish tasks that feel like they can only be kept up for a few weeks. So I like to ask about confidence levels. I like to ask on a scale of 1 to 10, when we meet next week, how confident do you feel that these will all be done? And I like that it kind of helps the person picture themselves 3 days into their crazy busy work week and where they will be and whether every single one of those things they listed will be realistic in their schedule. I really like to take a few minutes at the end of each session to have the person look at their calendar and check in on extra busy work projects or a crazy week where they're shuttling their kids everywhere. I like to use those kind of concrete examples of what's coming up to help the person get a stronger idea of what they can do in the next few weeks. And I actually do try to keep it to 1 week, because it's hard to think too far out when you're making those small changes. You really want to focus on the present. So yeah, that's kind of what I do to prompt the person to think again about how much is realistic.
And in the opposite direction, what's your strategy for helping clients overcome self-doubt or a lack of motivation?
So this is something I'm working on, because my initial feeling is always wanting to rescue the person from feeling like they can't do it. So I have noticed myself in the past say this, what very encouraging things of like, I know you can do it and that kind of thing. And I want to step back from that, because I do want the person to, I don't want to invalidate what that person is feeling, because that person is clearly noticing something in their past that makes them think this is not possible for me right now. I'm not 8 to 9 to 10. I'm not an 8 or a 9 and a 10 on the confidence scale right now. So I like to say, like, what is the concrete thing that you think will stand in your way of doing this? Sometimes it is a concrete thing, like I think I'll be too busy and I'll forget about it, or something at work will pop up and I won't have time to do this. And when that happens, we kind of create a contingency plan or a minimum. I find minimums really helpful, because they allow a person to still feel that inertia moving towards their goal, because they haven't fallen off anything. They're still taking an action for their goal, but that action is easier, it's more realistic. So that's kind of my strategy, getting the concrete barriers out in the open and trying to solve them the best we can during the session. And also trying to install some minimums to help the person see that I don't have to stop. I can pause, or I can take a smaller step and still move towards what I want to do.
Yeah, I like that, particularly that smaller step. I heard you in another interview talking about what your psychologist did with you at the beginning, which was just to go for a week drinking a glass of water every day.
Yeah, and that was so, I really think it turned around my impression of what I could do. I think before that, I felt that I was totally buffeted around by circumstance, and I didn't have the freedom to actually change anything about my day. And I think that's why I constantly go back to that foundation and that philosophy of let's do something small, because it was shocking to me how much that small action did pave the way for me to build that self-trust and create so much change later. So I know that it helped me. So I think my instinct is to want to lean on that experience and trust that that can help other people as well.
Yeah, so it makes sense, I guess, when they are feeling that they can't do it, again, just to scale back to something that they can do.
Yeah, because they are the one who wants to get to the goal, and I can't do the action for them. And so the question then becomes really logically, like, well, if this action doesn't feel possible, and if you're feeling like it's not possible, and if this other smaller action isn't possible either, is this goal worth it to you? And it's not a question of, oh, you're not working hard enough. It's more like, let's honestly ask, like, there is difficulty in making this change. Absolutely. There's creativity you have to use. There's time that you have to devote and energy you have to devote. So you get to choose almost like I'm always encouraged by the fact of like, I don't have to do anything that I'm doing. This is all a choice that I'm trying to be self-employed. And this is a choice. Like, it's hard. And also, I don't have to do it. I could go back to a 9-to-5 anytime, but I'm choosing it because I do want that outcome. And it's similar to any goal that someone sets. If you want to change your eating and your movement to reach a healthier weight, no one is telling you you must do it. And so you can take some action, and you don't have to if you don't want to. So that leaves the question, do I want to? Do I want to take on that more difficult task? And I think that's nice because it brings it back to not getting lost in the kind of useless thoughts, common but useless thoughts of, I don't think I can do it. I've never done it before. I'm scared. And it brings it back to, well, what is capable? What am I capable of? What is possible? What is the action that feels right for me here? I always like to bring it back to concrete.
Yeah. And speaking of it all being little actions, I don't remember who I'm stealing this from, but somebody said that, and they would have stolen it from somebody who stole it from somebody who stole it from the ancient Greeks, who stole it from somebody else. But every action that you do is a vote for the kind of person that you want to be.
I like that. I never heard that before. The person I was talking about, the Heather Robertson, who has lost 170 pounds and maintained it. She has this wonderful like red brick challenge, she calls it, which is you kind of divide the day into half hour sections, and each half hour section gets a color. I made choices that move me towards my goal, or I made choices that moved me away from my goal. And so every single half hour in that case was a vote for the person you want to be. So you can kind of see your red bricks pile up and show you that you want to move towards the goal. And I thought that was so cool. And when you said that quote, it really just popped that up in my brain.
And that pops up in my brain when I am making choices. So what kind of vote am I making here? Do I want to be that kind of person or that kind of person? But just want each little choice.
Yeah. Oh, it's so powerful.
Yeah. What's one piece of wisdom that you consistently find yourself, you just find it coming out of your mouth again, whether it's clients or friends or family? Yeah. What's one piece of wisdom that you're constantly sharing with people?
Ooh. That's a good one. They all flew out of my head just now. See, I think one thing that I often bring up when folks are feeling that like exhaustion is kind of like taking that step back perspective of viewing the wins. So we have, I'm sure all the coaches you talk to talk about our brains evolutionarily being focused on the negative, just as a way to be safe from the lions and tigers and alligators out there in our evolutionary brain. So it makes sense that all of us are focused on what someone didn't do. So I think what I like to bring up when someone's feeling exhausted or unsuccessful is a concrete look at what are the things you did this week that you're glad you did. You did this for future you. You did this for your kids. Or even like, this is something that has nothing to do with your health goal, but you notice that it's a change in your thinking, or it's a change in what you might have done in the past. So yeah, I like to focus on bringing up the positive evidence to counter that negative bias that we all have in our brains.
100%. Yeah. Such a huge difference in life. I'm not one who believes in manifesting in such a way of like closing your eyes and dreaming of that Ferrari and then the Ferrari will appear in front of you. But I definitely know that the way that you look at things is how you're going to see the world and how your mindset is going to be. So the more that you can notice the good things. And that's why I start with a gratitude meditation every single day. Because, our brain automatically looks for all the negative crap. But if you can just see all the positive stuff in life, then you'll start having a better life immediately without any changes happening because you'll be looking at the world through those positive glasses. Well, it doesn't mean you're not going to see the negative as well, but at least add on the positive to it.
Yeah, you're helping the scale move. Tip a little bit in the positive direction if you can. I love the idea of a gratitude practice. It's hard for me to keep it up sometimes because it's a challenge. Like, what do you do when you are challenged to think of something that you're grateful for? Do you have any like backups or like ways to get your perspective a little bigger?
Yeah, I cheat. I do, and I'll put a link to it on my page, jeremywest.net. But I use a YouTube it's like a 12-minute meditation, and it says, I'm grateful for the flowers. I'm grateful for it. Just gives me all the stuff to be grateful for. And that makes me, when I'm doing that, I am thinking of the stuff in my individual specific life that relates to that. But yeah, I don't have to come up with it at all.
I love that. I think one thing that I try to do if I'm in that brain space where I'm like, nothing's good, I like to like look out the window and like imagine that something disappeared and kind of ask myself like, well, how would life be if that thing didn't exist? And then it makes me thankful for that thing. If like the flowers, or even we have in Staten Island, which is where I live in New York, we have this like odd few packs of wild turkeys, like feral turkeys, that just, so if I see a pack of turkeys that makes me laugh, and then I imagine they weren't there, I'm like, no, I'm grateful for these turkeys. They gave me a little joy today. So I like to imagine that something disappears, and that helps me think of something.
Yeah. Well, so I do improv theater, and which I find is the most mindful that I am besides meditation is when I'm either practicing or performing improv, because you're with, and I highly recommend it. If there's an improv theater in your area, you don't have to perform. You can take classes and just learn the techniques, and it does make you mindful because you're standing there with someone else making something up on the spot with them without talking about it, and you just really have to be paying attention to what's happening, not thinking about all the chores that you have to do or what you're gonna have for dinner or whatever else. What was my point? There's a lot of games and stuff that you do in improv, and one of them I have used with clients, which is when they can't come up with what they can be grateful for. And instead of saying, I am grateful for this or thank you for that, the game is to just say, what's not wrong with my life? What's not? And then you can say, well, I have a house. And what's not wrong with my life? Well, I have a car. And at least if you can't be saying thank you, you're at least noticing the things that aren't wrong right now.
I think that's awesome. And can I just say, I've never thought of improv as being a mindfulness exercise. But when you said that, it made so much sense, because you're in the moment, you really can only listen. That's what you have to do. You have to react in the moment. You can't be spaced out. And I think it's probably a real point for me. No, I've never done it. I would imagine it's a growth.
I was going to say, if you had done improv, you probably would have noticed it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
It's so many skills for life.
Yeah. I want to suggest it to other people. I would love to suggest it to other people, because it really sounds like what you do is you put yourself in the exact present moment. And I think I always default to wanting to be mindful on my own, because I think it's hard to get into that state of getting out of my head and getting into my body. And I don't want other people waiting around for me. So whenever I'm with other people, I over-prepare for job interviews or coaching sessions, or even just talking with someone at a party. But it's always better when I don't over-prepare and I just get in the moment and listen. So it sounds like a good practice for me. I should probably get started with it.
It is. So it's that mindfulness, but it's also listening, conversation. The first thing you learn is yes and. I don't know if you've heard of that, but that's the ethic in improv. You don't say no to what the other person's creating. And so it really translates to real life as well, because that's our first instinct is usually to argue with people at work or whatever, like, oh, no, that's not going to work because of this. So you learn to be positive with other people's ideas and stuff as well. It's very, a lot of good skills for life, even if you never want to perform it on stage. And New York City is an easy place to find improv troops. The New York City stand-up comedians seem to make fun of it and think it's stupid, but I don't find that here in where I live. There's not such a divide between stand-up comedians and improv people, but anyway.
Oh, that is true, though. I do see that divide, like the cynical stand-up comic, the self-deprecating stand-up comic, and like the really energetic improv people. It's such a divide.
Oh, and it's a team sport too. everyone's working together, whereas in stand-up comedy, I've done a bit of both, in stand-up comedy, it feels much more like you're competing against everybody else, but you're all working together. And anyway, we've gone way off topic here. Let me ask you two final questions. And these, you mentioned the question that you stole from, who did you steal that question from?
Heather Robinson? Oh, no, Greg Faxon.
Maybe. Great. Yeah. Anyway, I've stolen my last two questions that I'm going to ask here from comedian Mike Kaplan, who has a podcast called Broccoli and Ice Cream. And these are the final two questions he always asks. And I know it's okay that I've stolen them because he was the guest on episode 20, a few episodes back from yours. And I asked him those two questions and he was happy to be asked them. So here they are. It's basically to just make sure we haven't missed anything that we could have covered in this. Obviously there's lots we could cover, but these two questions are, you can answer no, that's fine, that maybe we have covered everything we need to cover today, or if you have something, then that's great as well. So basically, first one is there anything that we were talking about that you didn't get to say as much as you wanted to because we did head off in a different direction or go on a tangent?
Ooh, that's a good question. No, nothing comes to mind.
And then the other one is a little bit bigger. Megan Gall, a lot better than I do. You've known her a lot longer than I do. So is there anything that I didn't even know to bring up that would be a glaring omission in a survey of the life and work of Megan Gall?
Well, at the age of 12, I played trumpet on the stage of Carnegie Hall because my local Burleigh, my local little band got to do it because we were close by in the same city, and it was a but I would be remiss if I didn't mention my awesome achievement there.
Yeah, definitely. Fantastic. All right. Well, thank you very much, Megan, for coming on. Now, there's the point of the podcast is anyone who wants to listen and glean anything that they can on self-development from hearing my chats with all different kinds of coaches. And but also for people that hear a specific coach that they think, oh, my God, I need that person in my life. So those that are listening today, thinking, I really need Megan Gall in my life to help me move forward, how do they find you?
So they can find me. I have all my links pretty easily accessible on my Instagram. So they can follow me. My handle is partake_foodie. So it's partake_foodie. And I have a...
FOODIE?
Yeah, foodie, FOODIE.
Just double checking.
Mm-hmm. So I have on there a link to my coaching information, and I have a link to join my free meal planning club where we get together on live every week and we plan a menu for the following week. It's fun. You get some work done and you get some company and coaching while you're doing it.
Fantastic. And if they don't have Instagram, is there another way they can find you?
Yeah. They can go to my website, which is partakemealplanning.com, and I have tons of resources on there and my coaching page as well.
PartakeMealPlanning.com.
That's it.
Thank you. And anyone who needs to reach me, it's jeremywest.net. That has all my links, including to all of these episodes. And what did I say I was going to put up there? Oh, a link to the gratitude meditation that I do will be there by the time this airs. Thank you very much, Megan, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, this was great. Thank you for having me, Jeremy.
Thank you.